Welcome, listeners. You are listening to the Power Hour on iHeartRadio. Welcome, listeners. You are listening to the Power Hour on iHeartRadio. Alan Myers here, sitting in, guest hosting for Daniel Brigman. For those who might be new to the program, the Power Hour is about informing and educating we the people on the real challenges that we face today. I am very fortunate to have two wonderful guests to help me with this task. One is my longtime friend, Constitution educator, scholar, speaker, Douglas V. Gibbs. Doug, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me, Alan. Appreciate it.
It's wonderful. And a new friend of mine who I'm doing a podcast with, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and he doesn't mind me calling him this, a millennial, Roman Valenzuela. Roman, welcome to the Power Hour.
Alan, good morning. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, this is going to be wonderful. What I like to do in the beginning of my programs, because I'm going to plug myself for one moment, and it's not in competition with the Power Hour. Sundays at 5 to 7 West Coast time, I am on Patriot Soapbox, and I have a show called For the Republic. And I usually open every episode with what I like to call wackadoodle news. And I call it wackadoodle news because it is, and it was out there in the last week. So, gentlemen, we'll do, let's say, maybe three or four, depending on how long it takes, on what I found last week in the news. You ready? Here we go. San Jose mayor rolls out new gun control proposal. Now, I'm going to stop right there because I find, and you guys know, I get real picky about words and phrases. I get real picky about terminology. We're not talking gun control. Gun control is a proper grip, an easy trigger pull, and you hit what you're aiming at. That's gun control. What they're talking about is gun ownership registration, gun ownership confiscation, you name it. It's not gun control, and I wish they would stop using this term. This is what the mayor of San Jose wants, in part. Keep in mind, San Jose is the third largest city in California. California has more gun restrictions on its books than any state in the country, and he wants to add more. One, audio and video record of gun sales. Doesn't this sound like China and the social credit score? You have to have proof of liability insurance as a gun owner, because this is going to help cover the cost associated with gun violence. They want fingerprints to buy ammo, and if you do not comply, the police can confiscate. I'm going to say one thing about this idea that having liability insurance will incentivize safer behavior from gun owners. There are approximately 393 million firearms in this country. Based on the number and the population, you might say it's 110, 120 firearms per 100 people. If the average gun owner was a liability, there wouldn't be anybody left on this continent. We would have all shot each other up. The liability insurance isn't going to stop a criminal. It's completely ridiculous. Doug, you're the Constitution guy. How does this sit with you?
Well, my first thought before we get to the Constitution is, if you have a liability insurance, it's going to encourage more unregistered activity, unregistered trade, or obtaining a gun, because people are not going to want to pay the insurance. They think it's ridiculous, and they're going to do things outside the law. And also it's going to make a lot of us criminals. That said, when it comes to constitutional land, you know, your right to keep and bear arms is a natural right. It's a God-given right. It's not to be infringed. Second Amendment applies to the federal government and says, shall not be infringed. States can make laws regarding guns, but it is up to us, we the people, to do what we can to, of course, limit those laws. That said, if you look at the terminology in the Second Amendment, keep and bear arms. Keep is to own, to possess, but bear is the key word. Bear is to have a gun under one's coat, as it says in the 1828 Webster's Dictionary. So in other words, the constitutional carry laws that we see now spreading across the country, those are truly constitutional, truly intended natural right related laws. You have a right to keep and bear arms, period. The local government, federal government should not be passing this kind of thing. I will end my comments with this. One time someone asked me, Doug, what do you think of the Patriot Act when it first came out? And I said, well, it's a waste of time. And they said, what do you mean? So, well, we already have a Patriot Act. It's called the Second Amendment. And I guarantee you, if every American had the ability with no restraint by government, except for little laws like, you know, we don't want, you know, little kids buying guns or something like that. But aside from that, if every American with no restraint from the federal government was able to keep and bear arms and everybody was walking around for the most part, or at least you thought everybody was, with a gun on their hip, terrorism would not be a concern.
Doug, thank you for that. Roman, I'll get to you in a moment. I just want to make a comment on what Doug said.
Absolutely.
One of my friends, longtime friends, who I will just say is very operational, I'll let you understand that, he once told me that the nicest, kindest people he had ever met was at a Texas gun show. And you brought up the Second Amendment, and I am not the constitutional scholar you are, but I like to weigh in on this one. And keep in mind that the Constitution and the amendments, especially this one, is about telling the federal government what to do. A well-regulated militia, and I've learned this from you, Doug, well-regulated does not mean a bunch of regulations. It means put in good order. Militia, back in the day, was it George Mason that said this,
yes.
Doug?
Mm-hmm.
Militia is all the people except for a few politicians.
Let me rephrase that. The whole of the people and a few politicians.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Here's the kicker. That, what we just talked about, being necessary to the security of a free state. State is a capital S, which means they're emphasizing that word. Who in the HE double hockey sticks has to protect the state from? Could it be the federal government? I believe it is. Roman, your thoughts.
I think I don't have any thoughts as of yet. I just have some questions, if I could ask.
Oh, come. Questions?
So,
no way.
You're in the right company, brother.
After, you know, stating the figures, is firstly, does the almost 400 million firearms that are in this country, does that include the military as well? And secondly, what is the actual size range of the arms that you can carry?
Well, I will say that the almost 400 million is civilian owned, not military.
Okay.
Doug? You want to comment on the second question?
Well, when it comes to concealed carry, rifles, long arms are not included or allowed typically. We're talking about small arms such as revolvers or handguns. That said, because the purpose of the Second Amendment and because the purpose to keep and bear arms is not just so that the well-regulated militia, the militia that is in good order, in other words, is able to defend this country against invaders, but also to defend this country against an internal enemy, which is potentially our federal government. If that's the case, then what it should be is that the average American should be able to own and operate firearms that are equal to or greater than what the government has in power and capacity. And the way I like to explain it is the government, they are our servants. This is our house. The servants are telling us our guns make them nervous. Of course the guns make them nervous. They're the reason we're carrying the guns.
Roman, any more questions?
No. The only thing that stuck out was that equal to or greater than. I think that statement alone would incite a little bit of fear into an audience that isn't really familiar with the whole logistics and laws in regards to carrying firearms. That even took me by surprise, what you were saying, because if you're talking about equal to or greater than, that puts a lot of power in the hands of the American people, which we are entitled to. My only fear is that the power in the wrong hands has inherent consequences.
I understand and I agree, Roman, and I would put it this way. We have become accustomed in our society to a tremendous amount of power. Can you imagine bringing somebody into, let's say, from the 1770s, 1790s, get them in our Wayback Machine, bring them forward, and take them to a monster truck rally? What are they going to think about that machine?
Okay. They're going to be overwhelmed.
Right. To me, and this is the way I say it, because, yes, there's an old saying about power can be abused and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and I disagree with that. Power that is controlled, directed, and monitored by responsibility, obligation, and consequence will not be abused. When you have the ability to take power, education, training, and understanding what the responsibilities are and there will be consequences must also be educated in at the time. Just like you don't just turn 16 and go start driving a car. No, you got to take driver's education. You got to pass a written test. You got to pass a driving test. And then finally you get the license. All of this requires, to me, education, training, and a sense of responsibility, not only for your own safety, but the safety of everyone else out there. Because you want them to be safe around you. Next, wackadoodle
news. Real quick, if I might add something.
Oh, would you?
If you don't mind.
No, of course not.
The interesting comment by Roman was that, you know, he's concerned about the power in the wrong hands. Power in the wrong hands is government hands. If power gets in the wrong hands among the people, because there's power in the right hands, they cancel each other out. Because the fact is, the power in the wrong hands, in other words, the criminal element, they have a very interesting thing about them that people are shocked to hear. They believe in self-preservation. Therefore, if they think that power is also in the right hands and it's unrestricted, they're not going to be so quick to pull out their firearm because they know they can be shot and killed by the power in the right hands. In other words, good guys with guns stop bad guys with guns.
And gals. Don't forget the gals.
Yes, we mustn't forget the gals.
Because, and I'm going to plug it. I'll tell you what's really interesting about about being on the Power Hour today, that this time last Monday, I was flying home from Rapid City, South Dakota. I attended and was a speaker at Red Pill Expo 2021. My topic was a little unusual, and I spoke about women of the American Revolution. I spoke about five of them. If anybody's interested, go to redpillexpo.org. You'll be able to, now or soon, be able to watch all the videos of all the speakers. But it's not just the guys, it's the gals. And I found, and this was just the first five I found, five incredibly powerful, strong, committed, and if necessary, dangerous women. Now we move on to, I don't know if this is good or bad. The FDA told Johnson & Johnson to throw out 60 million doses of their vaccine because it was made at what they called a troubled plant. The plant was in Baltimore, and apparently the 60 million doses must be discarded because of possible contamination. It's now Johnson & Johnson was supposed to be a big help because they were going to fill in a gap. It's one dose, not two doses. But 60 million doses? They were able to create that many under a potentially lax and in an environment that is contaminating batches? This gives me great concern for everything that's being produced so quickly. Roman, have you heard about this and any of your thoughts?
I did hear about this, actually. I heard about it right when it happened. The only thing that I have to think about or my thought on is that is indeed a lot of vaccines that needed to be recalled. How I feel about that is that fortunately they were able to do damage control and recall that many as well. So I understand how that is very alarming. And that's one of the things that's alarmed me about this vaccine in general is the speed at which it's been created. Now it is 2021. Our technology is far superior than when the polio vaccine was created, for instance. I think what scares me the most is the scale of production for something that can go wrong. When the polio vaccine, for example, first came out, 60 million doses, I don't even know if there was 60 million people, in the country at that time. There might have been. I'm not sure what the exact number is. But to produce something on that scale is truly mind-boggling. And so there needs to be more monitoring in place when you're dealing with the production size of that quantity.
Thank you for that. It's interesting to note the scale and the speed at which this was done. Now, to help out, the good people at Pfizer have decided to donate 500 million doses at cost, okay, to other countries around the world. Yet the good people at the World Health Organization estimate that they're going to need another 11 billion doses to what they say stamp out the epidemic. Douglas, your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about this bad batch of a vaccine that's bad. How do you have a bad batch of something that's already bad for us and is more deadlier than the disease that has not been isolated and they actually technically have no evidence of the virus itself actually existing? It's funny because I absolutely appreciated the last president, but I had a real problem with the warp speed. Let's hurry up and get a vaccine out there. I'm a firm believer that our bodies, our systems are capable of healing themselves, that our that our immune systems become stronger in combat. For one thing. Secondly, this is not a vaccine. I hate the fact that they call it that. A vaccine such as the polio vaccine takes the organism that has been isolated, that exists, and puts a weaker version or a dead version of it into your body so that your antibodies can react, your immune system can react to create antibodies so that if a more deadlier or virulent strain is able to get to you, your body's already been in combat mode and it's ready for it. What this does is it simply does not do that. What it does is it sends a message to your DNA to produce proteins that we are finding out now are causing all kinds of problems with our systems because it's not natural. It's an unnatural way to try to fight this boogeyman that's out there. Happening is a lot of people are dying. So when I hear a bad batch, and I'm thinking a bad batch of something that's bad, how about we scratch the entire thing and allow our immune systems to do their job? Or either that or if the COVID-19 virus is out there, let's find it, let's isolate it, and then,
Doug, I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off because we're coming to the break time.
Right.
And we'll come back to this if we want.
I'm actually done, but very good.
Okay. I want to say this is that each company was paid hundreds of millions of dollars by the federal government to manufacture this stuff. And my question is, if these are bad, are they going to have to pay the government back? Just something to think about. Anyway, we will be back here on the Power Hour after these important messages.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with olive oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that olive oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita Silver Lozenges. of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
If you eat your Manna food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high-quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Listeners, welcome back to the Power Hour. Alan Myers here, sitting in for Daniel Brigman, joined with my guests, Douglas Gibbs and Roman Valenzuela. Little promo for the Power Mall. Check it out at www.thepowermall.com or call them 877-817-9829. You can do that Monday through Friday, 8 to 4 Central Time. Because when you work with the Power Mall, you're buying from the good guys. I forgot to announce, and I apologize, we do have a call-in number. It's 844-769-2944. Again, 844-769-2944. I believe we've had a very patient caller on the line, Chad from North Carolina. Chad, are you still there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear. Welcome to the Power Hour.
Thank you, thank you. I was listening to your discussion, and I've been assessing what's going on in the last few years, actually longer, and it seems like we are under assault by big tech and big pharma. Because there's no way that they could just go and you notice the government keeps tying us to this debt of spending all this money on questionably safe, I say extremely dangerous shots, promoting what looks to me like an attempt at mass genocide. And spending our money on it at the same time. It's really disturbing that more people, you know, are not incensed by this. I talk to people every day that tell me, oh, I got the shot. I'm like, why? You know, why'd you do it? I told a story about 4 weeks ago where a coworker of mine relayed the story to me where a local person at a funeral home had gone and gotten one of these shots, and when he arrived back and got out of the car, he keeled over dead. So I think we've got politicians involved in pushing this stuff. I've seen it on TV. I saw a commercial yesterday just flipping channels, and it was a famous actor, I'm not sure what his name is, I've seen his face before, telling everybody that this is our shot. Trying to make it sound like it's a great fad to go out and get this thing. And, well, the general public, a lot of them are very wary of it if you talk to people on the street. So that's a good sign, but I don't see any pushback. I don't see enough effective pushback.
Chad, thank you for those comments, and I'll respond. You talked about big tech and big pharma. I'm going to give you a little quote that I've kind of taken and reworked for my own benefit. Henry Kissinger, and I'm no fan, said, oil, I would say energy. When you control energy, you control a country. He said, when you control food, you control the people. And a friend of mine, Darren Anderson, he asked me once, what do you control when you control data or information? I said, you control minds. So the overlay for me is this, because this is my area, basic monetary system education. I would say it this way. When you own and control the monetary system of a country, you own and control energy, food, and data. So to your point, yeah, we got a problem. We got a real problem. Regarding the spending of money, I would say what our federal government is doing, which nobody is really pushing back on, but I do try to educate on this, is our debt, the Treasury debt. It's now over $28 trillion. And to give people an idea of just how monstrous that is, because, you know, I mean, you've got people in Congress and D.C. talking about adding or doing spending bills of $1, $2, $3 trillion. Now, I'm a numbers guy, but saying a trillion is one followed by 12 zeros, that doesn't work with me. Saying it's $1,000 billion, I still don't get it. I put trillion in what I call three understandable units, seconds, inches, and miles. Chad, if you were to live 1 trillion seconds, do you know how long you would live?
Probably longer than the general life expectancy, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, you would live 31,709 years. That's 1 trillion seconds.
Wow.
Okay, so that ain't going to happen. So you decide you want to get some exercise and you want to walk 1 trillion inches. And anybody who's got a ruler can pick it up and see how dinky 1 inch is, right? If you walked 1 trillion inches, you would walk a distance equal to 633 times around the Earth at the equator. One lap, 24,500 miles. Is that going to happen? I don't think so.
Not today, not with the current restrictions. I definitely don't see that as a possibility.
Okay, your last hope. You want to be the first one to get the trillion-mile frequent flyer card. All you have to do, Chad, is fly a distance equal to 107 round trips from Earth to Pluto and back, 107 times, and you will make that trillion miles. Is that going to happen? I don't think so.
Wow, Alan, trillion
is not very likely.
So I think, and that, remember, that's 1 trillion, and our Treasury debt is at 28 plus trillion. It is unpayable. It is soon to be unserviceable. It's a Ponzi scheme because the federal government has no for-profit business to repay it. And eventually, our government's going to run out of lenders. So, Chad, thank you for your comments. Appreciate you coming on and being a listener to the Power Hour. You take care and you be safe. Thank you, Chad.
I'll try. You too.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, gentlemen, we are back. I've got two more wackadoodle news. I'm going to just go to the, because we got more to talk about, and I want to get into the Fed and anti-Fedless papers. This one is recent, last week, and the title is that a sex ed teacher taught, quote-unquote, porn literacy to prep school students. You got it. Apparently, prep school has a different meaning if you're teaching porn literacy. I'm not quite sure what they're preparing these students for, but these kind of curriculums are at these very expensive private schools, some in the New York area. You might pay as much as $55,000 a year for tuition. Now, there are some parents who are finally pushing back, But the teacher's controversial lessons also included an explicit, this is what the report says, an explicit slide presentation about porn and about a cartoon video teaching first grade students about touching themselves for pleasure. I am stunned and disgusted. Douglas.
If this was happening in the general population, they would call it child grooming by sexual predators.
Well, I think what's going to have to happen is parents of school-age children are going to have to really start to get involved locally and understand what is being said, done, taught in their children's schools. Because one person commented to me at one time that this might be happening in public schools too, to some degree. But to me, this, first of all, sex education is, for me, learning about the body parts. And any of this education without understanding the responsibility of what it is to be part of, be in a relationship, this is completely unacceptable. And this is nothing that a first grader or even a high schooler can properly process.
Right. You know, it ties into critical theory. Because what they're doing is, with the sex education, is a stereotype. And women are basically depicted in the sex ed as passive, men as predatory. And so it creates this oppression-oppressed dynamic in the minds of the children. And it's this push where, you know, no gender, we can't be different from each other. We're all just going to be exactly the same. It's a part of that. It is actually ties into the critical theory garbage that's going on. And it's cultural Marxism is ultimately what it is, number one. Number two, once again, and we've got a problem with pedophilia. We've got a problem with other sexual behaviors in our society as it is. And what it is you have the schools themselves, the teachers themselves, are participating in grooming children as if they were sexual predators, the teachers. This is the way that sexual predators in pedophilia groom their victims, is with the type of teaching that you're seeing at the sex ed level. And, you know, it's funny because I've been involved both directly and indirectly with fighting against this. And you said something that's very important, Alan, because you said it begins locally. All activism begins locally. Or as I like to tell people, and every time I say this on in chat rooms, I usually get dancing critters for this. We complain about the cockroaches in Washington, D.C., but we breed them locally. So I'm expecting the dancing cockroaches in the chat room right about now. You know, it has to begin locally. If you can't get control of your city council, your school boards, your water board, and everything else locally, how in the heck are you expecting to change the country and have an impact on Washington, D.C.?
Thank you, Doug. Roman, any thoughts?
Actually, anything. Would you be able to just clarify? So a sex ed teacher taught porn literacy. At what level of education?
According to this article, it went from K through 12th grade, or first grade through 12th grade.
Okay.
And these are prep schools, which are private.
Huh.
And apparently parents at one, and I'm not going to say the name, but it's a prep school.
Yeah.
Asked the administration for the content of the porn literacy lesson, and they were rebuffed. And those that thought the lesson to the first grade students at this school wasn't appropriate were told that they misunderstood the lesson.
I see what you're saying. I think porn literacy is the wrong word here. I have no idea why it would be called porn literacy. That needs to obviously be revisited. It's a very progressive concept. As far as sexual education and porn literacy go hand in hand, sex ed is meant to teach people about, like Doug said, body parts and functions and how things work. Now, as far as self-pleasuring is concerned, since that is something that is new ground, in a general sense, to be taught in a setting like that, I think needs to be revisited. Ideally, I feel like if in the good hands and done in a constructive way and not at first grade, maybe during puberty, for instance, then you would be able to get whatever it is that they're trying to get across better. Because a lot of people, and in my regard, because I went to a private Catholic school, so I know what that is like. And sexuality and things of that nature and questions that children have, a lot of the time don't get answered by their parents because the parents feel uncomfortable, awkward, or don't even have any of the answers themselves. So I think and I hope that whatever this porn literacy concept is trying to do is just trying to provide more education that might not be accessible to the children through their parents and whatever means that they have. Do I think that first graders should be given this thing? No, absolutely not. I don't even think first graders can even understand the true meaning of what good and bad is at that age. But is the concept of this porn literacy, which has an awful name and should be named something else, do I think that if it comes from a good place could actually be very valuable? Then yes, but not until much later. Not until much later.
Thank you for that, Roman. I will say this is that – and I'm glad you brought that term up, and that's something to be investigated. But I would say that public school is for basic education. You're not going to get religion there. And this kind of topic to me, other than the actual biology of all of it, which is important to know, this becomes a family issue, a parental issue. This would be not a standard class. This would be an elective, and the parents would have to agree to it. Because at that level, it's just too much information too early in a developing mind. And most likely will overwhelm or, you know, possibly bother, disturb. It's every family, all the parents need to make that decision for their child. This is not how to read, how to write, how to research. This is very personal, and you have to understand who's getting this information at what age and what their capacity is. Doug, you had one more thought?
Yeah, I wanted to break down some logic here. All right, because this is the way I think with my analytical mind.
Wait a minute, so, you got one of those?
Yeah, I found one in the parking lot last night.
Fantastic.
Well, you know, the liberals, you know, are so open-minded their brains fall out, so they're usually just laying around all over the place. Self-pleasure, they want to teach how to self-pleasure. And I'm thinking, okay, logically, does self-pleasuring an activity, that activity, does it need to be taught? I'm going to assume that anybody who wants to someday self-pleasure will figure it out on their own eventually. if they decide to engage in that activity. Therefore, it doesn't need to be taught. Therefore, there's some other reason behind teaching it. If it doesn't need to be taught, then that means there's a need by, from their point of view, of why it needs to be taught. And that throws up red flags. It's like, you know, going back to the jab in the arm. You know, if the purpose of the jab in the arm when it comes to the COVID scamdemic is to create the antibodies, but they're saying if you've already had the disease, you have the antibodies, you still got to get the jab in the arm. Well, then that now throws up a red flag. Same thing with this, the self-pleasure thing. You know, that's kind of something that I think people can figure out for themselves. So don't need to be taught. Therefore, from a logical point of view, there's something else behind it.
Thank you, Doug. Again, to me, there's things that are critical to know that aren't even being taught in schools nowadays.
You mean like how to balance a checkbook?
Well, how about how to fill out a check, even though they might not use them anymore? If you ask a lot of young people who were the major combatants in WW2, they won't know who they are. There's so much basic history that is not being taught. This, to me, good, bad, or indifferent, well-intended or not, is not needed in public education. This is private family stuff, and let's leave it there. So on that, we only have a few more minutes before top of the hour break. We're going to begin with Federalist Paper number 1. And I want to just take a few moments, and then probably when we come back, Doug, you can introduce more about yourself, your history, your education, and what you do regarding the Constitution. And if I get this wrong, you're going to tell me I got it wrong. So here goes. The Constitutional Convention took place May 14th to September 17th in 1787 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I want everybody to think about, gets into the summertime back east. No air conditioning. You think they spent over 4 months verbally battling over a document because it wasn't important to them, or that they didn't just figure it out in 2 days, in a weekend. They went over this over and over and over again and just hammered it out piece by piece, because they were building something. They were creating a document that had never seen the light of day on this planet. Originally, the convention was called to revise the existing Articles of Confederation, but the Articles of Confederation had been deemed to be too weak. One example was the Shays Rebellion. So they came there, and one of the key elements or key people in this whole creation of the Constitution was James Madison, 4th President of the United States. After the Constitution was written and was put out for ratification, then the papers came out. And there's 85 in each group. Some are called Federalist Papers. These are primarily in support of the Constitution. One of the lead authors was Alexander Hamilton. And the other was the other side, the anti-Federalist Papers. What I find interesting about reading these papers is what the supporters of the Constitution or the ratification thereof saw, felt, believed, wanted. And then what's the other side? The other side is the anti-Federalists, those who are opposed to the ratification, and they explain in great detail what their fears are. Doug, we got like 2 minutes. Anything briefly you want to add before we get to Federalist Paper 1 at the top of the hour?
Well, there were 3 authors of the Federalist Papers, Madison, Hamilton, and John Jay. John Jay and Hamilton were residents of New York, to which the Federalist Papers were directed. Madison was not. And the purpose was to convince the state of New York to ratify the Constitution because of the delegation in New York. There had originally been three, and only Hamilton remained in the convention. The other two had left and became anti-federalists, Robert Yates and Lansing, and they were arguing out loud against it. And
hey,
at the
hey,
time,
Doug,
it was...
Doug, I'm sorry for cutting you off. I just noticed...
yeah, we got less than 30 seconds, yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to add 10 more seconds, keep going.
they believed back then, as New York goes, so goes the country. And so everybody wanted New York to ratify it so the other states would follow suit. That was the idea.
Thank you so much. Listeners, this is the Power Hour. We will be back after these important messages. Please stay tuned. Doug, Roman, and I are going to be talking about Federalist Paper number 1. We'll see you in just a couple moments.
Heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.